We are able to deal with it within the time before. There will be no need for us to be continuing after the agenda of our house. So that's what I'm proposing, is that we will start with one of the new. Then get into the amendment. Let me welcome the department. Thank you. Regarding this matter, you recall, members, that we met with the department and the union to facilitate that they resolve the impact that was there between the department and the so-called union. You would recall that we avoided to the demand for the union, even at that particular year, save to call them by their name. If you recall, we talked about family one and family two, because the argument that was also confirmed by himself is that the matter of their membership in the threshold of 50,000 was a matter that was important to the committee. We, as a portfolio committee, we stayed away from recognizing them as such as an estimate or legitimation. What we agreed on is that the department, and together with those members, they must look into, in particular, the grievances that have been raised in 2002 up until the 8th of January this year. The issue is that they address those issues and they find one another. In so doing, adding that they establish the right structure work and activity. The commitment was agreed to by all. We then requested that we propose that whichever way must be the convener of the Cabo Committee. We indeed know that other committees are really other committees. They don't take more than three. Life and it's just for address those specific issues. want to reiterate what we are saying. Not that we can say we want to involve ourselves in the issues of the so-called people who are calling themselves unions and the problems that we're having as a matter of the people. We then agreed in that meeting that would urge the department to table progress reports before this committee, written reports before this committee in early May, which unfortunately we didn't receive such a report. We did communicate with the department 2 times. And only last week then was I then informed that there was an action that was going to take place by SANDU. Firstly, I must indicate that I got that information through a colleague from Mr. Shah to then say, Chairperson, there is this thing that is going to happen. He gave me a copy of the demand that were intended to be made by SANDU. Yes, I did receive a call to indicate that a Mr. Tubazan of SANDU wanted to talk to me on Thursday last week, but we were unable to communicate up until Friday. On Friday, he then called and he found me in the office. Responding to his call, he then indicated that they were on a march heading for Pretoria. I must say, members, I did, in no uncertain terms, told Mr. Tubazana that I'm very much disappointed with what they are doing. Because, for starters, they did not communicate with this particular portfolio committee, either in writing to indicate that they were having a problem within the ad hoc committee. The only 2 letters that the chairperson of the portfolio committee received came only from SACSO and the other SANDU. Not the SANDU of the 8th of January. That March, that intended to march, even at that particular time. I'm saying that I did bring that to his attention, that this particular portfolio committee does not have anything in writing to indicate that they had progress within the ad hoc committee. We left it there. I then called Mr. Mkwin, and I indicated to General Mkwin that he must come and report before this particular portfolio committee on progress and also what transpired on Friday. That's the reason that Mr. Mkwedi is here, the member, together with the Secretary of Defense, to take us on board. Because this defeats the facilitation of the intervention that this particular portfolio committee intended to make, to resolve the impact of that at any time. Without any further ado, members, I would request the department and the sector, together with the Evan Kwesi, to brief us. Firstly, Mr. Kwesi, as to why you did not respond to the letter that the chairperson wrote to you. Now that we are confronted with this kind of situation, then you can respect that. Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Member.
appears to the person that this is not happening. In 5.4 occasions, and to not understand what the person is doing. To respond, to explain to us in the command, and then take the blame and you look up on it, that this is not happening. And after that, the person,
before I give him the platform to take honorable members through the report, I must say that we acted indeed according to the guidelines and direction that we received from this honorable committee in terms of how to deal with the problems of trade union. At the time, we were all satisfied, all of us. But indeed, the way charted forward by this committee was going to take us forward. And I must say that as a command, we indeed delegated General Mkwevi as the three-star general and the chief of the human resources to personally take charge of the situation. And in our assessment, certainly diligently did do so personally. We had more than 9 engagement meetings starting from the 4th of April, 10th April, 17th April, 4th May, 28th May, and so on. Really engaging with his staff, although a few of his meetings he could not attend, but he really took charge of the situation and tried his best under the guidance of the DOC to try and find solutions to the problem. But unfortunately, the results are really disappointing. The bickering is continuing. We are almost back to square one. In terms we have made no headway, despite all the efforts that we have put into this. But I will give General Mkwevi the floor now to take the honor of members, and then we'll come back and report on what we see as DOD, the way forward.
Due respect to the sector. We always want to be very clear, and we don't want issues to be hidden under carpet. You know, when you don't show respect to Parliament, you create a problem for us. We need to be very clear about that. Because whatever the sector is saying, it doesn't explain the fact that they've disrespected you and disrespecting you. So disrespect to us as an institution. And said they have known for a matter of fact that they are reporting to this institution. And for Umgwe not to be able to follow that procedure is a problem in itself. So I don't know after what he has said that what it is that he should do as Alan, because he doesn't come across as saying that these are the reasons that made them not be able to honor what he has asked. Put your reputation and Parliament's reputation as an institution in a danger zone where you have asked certain things to be done, and when they are not being done, then becomes a problem. And with knowing in written history how people treat Parliament, I don't hope that the type of an attitude I can look up what you're saying, for example, that people die or think with a long way to show disregard to Parliament, the serious problem. It's a strong warning from us that it must never happen again. When you issue to order on behalf of Parliament, you deserve a little bit of respect, and respect for the institution itself. Because you are not there as an individual. You are there on the basis of Parliament as an institution. And we have got clear, worked out rules and relations of how we're doing this. And also, it's very clear that Parliament must respect that as an institution. It's worth when people are coming. So I really appeal to you to appeal to them that this must never again happen. And if it happens, we'll take a system better. Because it then does also explain, even if you want to be sympathetic to their opinion, that even when you notice that there's bad management, it then explains that particular problem, the recurring problem, when it happens versus Parliament itself. I'm ready, even before Uttar Kuru, the temple of God, let him understand that it's a very serious thing. It's a very serious thing to not honor or not to honor what Parliament has instructed you to do on your behalf. It's a very serious thing. You can take action against it.
No, I want to liberate Honorable Boy. I spoke to General Mukwege on Friday. And I actually wanted them to come and say what they were saying, rather than to apologize to me, because they did apologize to me profusely on Friday. So that then I'm then saying it was deliberate for me for the committee, so that they can express their regret.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. As the Department was tasked to facilitate the EC of investigation and the creation of the Department of Defense, and one was appointed therefore to lead the Admiral Committee. Having left in March, going back to Victoria, it became clear to us that we had to invite all the military trade unions, which we know of, which they are registered, although they might not necessarily meet the required threshold. And a letter to invite them was sent out, and a meeting was set for the first of April. And we all of them did honor that particular meeting. They did attend. And the idea was to explain to them that the reason why we were assembling on that particular day was to establish the ad hoc committee as mandated by the Portfolio Committee on Defense. And the reason of establishing that ad hoc committee was also explained that is to make sure that the Military Bargaining Council and its structures do work in an efficient and effective way in resolving and addressing whatever issues might arise in terms of legislation within the military environment. The first thing which transpired out of that meeting was that standard two members, Honourable Members, I think for the clarity here, we ended up with two standards in terms of the security of leadership of standards. And then for our own purposes, we had to give them names, although the court has not necessarily decided who actually is the instrument leadership. So the one led by Major Masumane, we refer to as stand one. The one led by Yubazana, then we refer to as standard two. And then this standard two under leadership of Mr. Yubazana on the meeting of the 4th April then started challenging us in terms of our letter of invite. The issue being, we did request that the unions must send us two members, and we qualified those members as elected members. That became a source of debate in terms of elected members. Because within the union environment, there are officials who might not necessarily be elected members, therefore, they are not in uniform. As a department and as an officer and a general, I thought it would be at least more manageable to deal with the uniformed people when we discuss, even if they are in the military trade environment, than discuss with the officials. But it came out as a surprise to me and the members of the department that the unions were saying, no, you cannot dictate to us. So we had to live with the situation for the sake of fairness. But at the end of the day, it transpired that the officials of unions do not necessarily observe military protocol. Not necessarily observe military protocol. So it makes life a little bit difficult to manage that. Having said that, then, And we requested that now the names must be forwarded to the meeting so that at least we can now know who are the actual members coming from the various ministerial states. Sandu 1 of Kasumane gave us names there and then. And then Sandu 2, they claim that they are not mandated, therefore they are not ready. Sandu also said they are not ready. And then, having established the other committee, then it was indicated to all and Sandu that they must go back and then advance the name so that the work of the other committee can start. Then on the 10th, that was the next thing, the following week, then we assembled, we confirmed from Sandu that the names were there, because they sent them before the actual meeting, but unfortunately they did not attend the second meeting, but the names were there. So we recorded the names. Sandu. Yes. With Sandu 2, Mr. Duvazana confirmed his name. Then the second name again, we were informed that will be provided before the end of the day. So in our deliberation, we started saying we need to look at the terms of reference of this ad hoc committee. And we need to look at the manner and form. Now, manner and form was more in terms of rule of engagement, of code of conduct, how we're going to do business, so that at least we can have something guiding us as an ad hoc committee. A long debate with took almost the better part of the day. We finally agreed, and we had some issues drawn up and recorded, and then we appointed a subcommittee to look at that so that in the next meeting of the 17th, then that subcommittee was expected to come back and report in terms of agreed terms of reference and manner and form. They came back on the 17th, we looked at this, it was a long debate again, and finally, one can say we established some sort of semblance of what we want to do. They were requested, therefore, to sign. The other two unions were willing to sign, but of course, Sandu 2 of Mr. Duvazana, they said they needed a legal opinion to revisit what has been done and established before they can append their signature. Subject to correction, I don't remember them finally signing at the end of the day, but the others. Inside. Sandu and then Sandu 1 inside. But then there was a challenge in Sandu 2. Although they claim that they will refer back to the legal people, whether these terms of reference are correct and these rules of engagement are they comfortable. But they never signed, but we continue nevertheless. And then it was agreed that we will have a dish instead of a 1-day meeting. We agreed that now we'll embark on a 2-day meeting, and this was almost the weekend. And everybody was available, and we started with that. Now, with the following session, going back to the terms of reference, the issues were two Sandu. Which Sandu? The legitimacy of Sandu 1 and Sandu 2. And this issue, right from the beginning, we said it is not us as an ad hoc committee to decide, but it is up to the two Sandus to sit and come back with one Sandu. With one Sandu, so that it is we can do away with two Sandus. And the dispute with the two Sandus is a question of leadership, not membership. So they all claim that the members they have one membership, but then the two groups of leadership, then the people who actually is leading. And that issue is before the court, and it's been before the court for a very long time. And up to today, that one has not been resolved. And that became a sort of contention and long debate in the meeting. Safe to say, Sandu 1 showed willingness to engage. Unfortunately, Sandu 2 was not prepared to engage. right through the process in terms of resolving the question of leadership. The other issue, which was part of terms of reference, was the question of the threshold. In terms of the regulation, chapter 20, then a union to be accepted and to participate in the MBC must have at least a minimum of 15,000 members. And unfortunately, none of them presently do meet that threshold. And that becomes a debate. And of course, SASU was not debating that because they accept that they do not meet the threshold. But SANDU is of the view that they do meet that threshold. And as a department, we are saying no. And we are saying no based on the information we have, because we must process their deduction. And knowing who the members are and how many they have, they place their membership at the vicinity of 17,000, and we place their membership at the vicinity of 13,000. And we place the membership of classes at the vicinity of 6,000. So, therefore, none of them do meet the threshold. Whether it's that one or that two, they don't, including that. Then the other issue which was part of the debate, especially from SASU, was the issue of the regulation chapter 20. The constitutionality of that, they are not accepting, they are challenging that, they think those regulations are not there, and they believe that they need to be revisited. We indicated to everybody that we can at least take note of what concerns they have and various areas of concern, but we cannot, as an ad hoc committee, address and begin to change the regulations, because that's not our money, but we can take note of whatever concern they have. So that was also looked at. And the main drive for all of us was to make sure that we quickly establish the MBC. And then there was a debate whether the MBC does exist or not exist. SANDU1 and SASU, they were saying the MBC does not exist because the regulations are flawed. So that was the challenge. So they were not recognizing, as far as I'm concerned, the existence of the MBC. Whereas SANDU2 of the Mr. Bazana was eager to have the MBC established, and so that the MBC can start with. The other challenge which transpired, SASU and SANDU1 realized that if we are advocating for the role of the MBC, they are not going to be eligible to sit in that MBC because of the tokens in terms of the threshold. And therefore, they push for the ad hoc committee to be the, in the meantime, the regulations are going to be revisited, to be the body to assist for any bargaining, if there must be any bargaining to be done. But we indicated them that the ad hoc committee was not set for that. And therefore, the department cannot agree because it is violating and probably not complying with the regulations. Now, that being the issue, then they felt that they cannot continue participating. But they were smart enough not to withdraw at that time. And they used a very weak position that the absence of General Mbuli became an issue in terms of attending and chairing the meeting. And everybody was always clamoring for General Mbuli to sit and chair. When one was suggesting that it cannot necessarily be General Mbuli sitting and chairing, officials of the department can at least represent in certain cases where General Mbuli is not available, which the member in a way accepted, and in certain cases I was not there. But because of the progress and where we were heading to in terms of moving towards the military and Council, the two universities recognizing that they are not going to be able to fit in that environment, then they use that situation to withdraw their participation. And then they withdrew in terms of engagement, SACU, and SANDUA. And in their absence, SANDUA then began to say, we want to go to the NDC, can you assist them to go to the NDC? We told them that we are open. You can write a letter to the secretary of the NDC and then call the NDC, which they did. And then the NDC was called. I think they expect on the 28th and 29th of May, under the chairmanship of the similar. First day, they were able to engage. Certain one did write a letter to the chairperson of the MBC indicating that they are not going to attend that MBC. And they were not there on the first day. On the second day, they did ask under the pretext that they wanted to read, they wanted to read their letter, which they have submitted to the secretary and the chairperson. Then the chairperson allowed them to read the letter. Once they finished, then the chairperson recognizes that they are two studies, and in the light of that, he said it's not prepared to move forward with two studies because he is expecting one. And from the department, we're also registering the issue of the study tool, which was claiming and requesting for the embassy, does not meet the threshold, and therefore the embassy cannot take. And then the chairperson of the MDC suspended the taking based on these factors. In a nutshell, this is what took place, this is what we have done. If then one is not, if it takes something, is that the language being used right through the process, especially by two sons against each other, was not something which one would love to listen to, but we had to manage that. And again, SANDUA2 had a tendency to pick set officials within the Department of Defense and just go and attack them. So one has to constantly make sure that this kind of language is not used against the official of the Department. One can record and probably say, in terms of how they conduct themselves, they come out based on my observation as a small professor and civilized. And I think they were at least able to go through. But again, understanding their weaknesses, then they also used a very nice way of entering out of the process, where they were just challenging for the absence of the facilitator. But how they conducted themselves was at least commendable. Then, finally, too, at a certain stage, they brought their president on board. And he was sitting in the meeting. Quite a very challenging issue to deal with the men, although I thought that dealing with the men in uniform was better, but it was quite very, very challenging for me to be as a person in that environment, because I think his understanding with the president of SANDUA2 and probably having membership, they tend to believe that they've got all the rights to listen, and they've got all the rights to speak the way they feel like speaking, and address people the way they feel like doing. So that is how they conducted themselves, especially. And again, with this plan to do, it became quite clear that they've got a very strong legal team, which was most of the time sitting outside, and during the process, it was difficult to engage them because they always used rates to consult. And again, they could not, although they were mandated to engage, they could not necessarily take decisions there and then. They always have to postpone and go back. So although they were leading, including during the presence of their president, but one could observe that the actual key decision makers are not necessarily sitting there, but one could say exactly where they are. But they were not sitting back to the court. The club was always constructed. We don't know who they are. But one could see that they're very this is what one can say in terms of the content and what has transpired. If one must probably say something in terms of the way forward, taking into account that the NDC were, and the Nano Committee moved towards the NDC, and the NDC could not progress and achieve anything because of the legitimacy of the Q-Sani, water block, and the issue being before the court, then one would recommend that the issue of Q-Sani that here is resolved, and then we know which side is side, then we can at least engage, if we must engage. But presently, I think it would be difficult at this point to engage without really clarity of who actually is the leader of the game. With the issue of the threshold, I think Sasu is saying the threshold of 15,000 is too high, and they are challenging the question of the regulation. And as the department will also view that there's nothing wrong with the regulation. And you are saying the threshold of 15,000 is very, very low if one takes into account that the membership, the military membership of the department goes to something close to 60,000. So if then we are saying that at least they must have 15,000 to qualify for office units, if one takes into account the general membership, then 15,000 is very low. Therefore, we also view that, but in the case of the special, there do need to be revisited at this stage. We are comfortable at the department. And the Sanyu too, they are also due that they've got 17,000, and we're also due that they've got 13,000. And again, the issue is before the court. Probably before the end of this month, we'll know what is the final position. So, this is the position as far as we are concerned. In the light of what has transpired and what has taken place, would recommend probably if the members to accept our explanation and our position that in the department the other committee activities are finished, but this time it is clear that the people do meet the mental requirements, I think.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think he has really summarized the challenges that we are facing. And as you have said in the past, to translate the intention that court would be accepted, we must come up with regulations, something, you know, establish rules and procedures on how to engage with the claim, you know, and the conditions spelled out very clearly within that. You know, we're going further now as a request for the directive of the committee to dedicate this. And despite the shortcomings and difficulties, legally, really, for us, there was no need at all to engage in these two big tackles. But we respected the ruling of the committee. We took legality aside to try and address the issue of the ruling of the committee. But this is now just the question of the United States not bringing them together. With them, you know, as one body is not materialized, we continue not to meet the threat of political extradition. And the way they conduct themselves, they continue with this political behavior and this part of political formation as clearly demonstrated on the strike. On Friday, challenging the commander in chief, not to have a and of course we are taking support and all those political things. It just got nothing to do with trade union and competition. So these are the challenges that we can manage. So as the management of the country, once more we said and we gave directives, once more look at the seven legal framework, first is to look at the conduct of Sanyu, specifically on the last month, you know, this political protest, and in the light of the previous court ruling on how much he should be conducted. authority, but we are also looking broader, you know. What other options we have? We are looking into what the other countries are doing, you know, how the associations are operating in other militaries, how the personal pay review board and so on, and, you know, also take into consideration what we do. My concern is to have finding something. But it is clear that the men of us were operating in the past, we cannot continue. So we are further looking into that problem. And soon we will really be coming to proposal to the honorable members of the parliament, not for the legal framework, and see how we take the process. On the other hand, we are looking very carefully at the gauges, you know, our command structures and so on, they are there on the ground, engaging our members on this. In the near future, we have to control the software with one on the gauges.
Before I allow members, I'm thinking here about what has been accomplished so far. So the Australian Committee proposed that they look into the parallel process and seek to address the challenges that have been not necessarily inter-union. That's why I keep on saying we never ever recognize the union. Say to say that there are those leaders that were hinting directly to the service members. Way in which the message must be communicated by yourselves in addressing the real issues that are grinding down our future. I hear that you've hit the devil, but the question still remains. What is being done by in addressing the very same challenges that you said, but the challenges are there and some are here. What is being done? Because this might as well prevent this kind of anger now that is driven by the so-called human. Now you are also now talking about insubordination. Because now our commanders are not commanders. Instead, we find that it is the union now that is giving the command. So the control is now placed at the juncture of the command. Okay. That's one question that now is coming. Is the department doing anything to investigate the core reason? Are there no ulterior motives or forces that might be steering this kind of a process? Apart from that, I'm becoming worried from what you are telling us, because the document that we have from the session does not directly talk to of them, so very clear that what you are able to talk to the people of Ethiopia is saying, talk to every other thing, everybody's political, Zimbabwe, and every other thing that then becomes a big one. I can't imagine soldiers begin to talk about that, because they are the ones that must be apolitical and wait for the commander in chief to give a direction.
The person I was going to say, it's clear like the interpretation of the mandate directed to show that the engagement is taking at parliament. We can't, we have to be very clear that the union can't get involved in that matter. It would be stream of us to continuously affect the department, to engage the divided tribunal movement. Is it misinterpretation of our mind? Is that interpreted correctly to say that type of position has to come to an end? Let the tribunal movement sort itself out and let it define its own role. We can't expect the department to be the unifier of tribunal and do the offense to the tribunal. So we need to give them support and advice now. I still think that it's important for the department to go into the constitutionality of the subordination and engage the constitutional court to define that type of position. Not the high court, the magistrates, but let's go straight to the, to the constitutional court, because that's where, you know, they are interpreting an individual right of saying that they do have a right to have a tribunal, which is a broad mandate within the constitution. So we need to be able to put our own specific constitution, our own specific conditions as defined as exactly. Does the constitutional court back up that type of statement? Does it warrant that the defense itself and to give that authority of creation of a particular movement? I'm just trying to find out if they have done that, or is there a different interpretation to that? Maybe the sector should talk to that man and give us guidance. If they've ever touched on that. We must concede, Sir President, to say that conditions, that's why we have always been saying that the land was part of the defense. Nothing has been done, even to the type of resources that is confronted. There is legitimacy to say that buildings are falling apart within the defense itself. There's a legitimate case in relation to that. That's why we've been trying to help with the 2020 interpretation and the building of the vision. But we do think that it's important that what a strategic package could not deliver for the landlord will be able to receive that. The question that arises is the department ready now to meet the needs of those ordinary people? We have gone to those places. That's why we even know. We've been recommending for years now that the military indulgence maybe must be removed where it is. We've been going to those places where we're seeing in Bone Police, Israel, Pretoria, and so on, the type of conditions that the soldiers are going through. And that's why we've been always saying that is what has to be imposed. And maybe the sector has to talk to that particular man, that what is he going to do in relation to the conditions that confront the soldiers themselves. So that we don't go and establish the bush and stick on what you know, and you've always been inquiring and asking the sector to address the landlord situation. So that's where the resources of the department is supposed to have gone to improve that particular situation and also that are confronted with. It will take over for them to run the tribunal for them to see the type of situation that they are confronted with. And I think that Parliament must stand up and be able to back up and say to them, finances that are in the department or in other divisions, if they can't go towards that direction to assist individuals with some of the basics that the soldiers are saying, they are very pathetic. In some of the areas where we went to this one, criminals were even walking across inside the basics, and that was not quite good. I mean, fences have fallen apart. And we have seen those supports. We've been telling the department for years that improved the situation so that we've never had congested grounds for tribunal. And to me, the management is what we need to be able to drive as Parliament and sit on them to improve that particular situation that I have to work with. And we don't really dance around and make sure that it must be sorted out. I'm not sure. You see, I'm not sure this, in the past 14 years that we're in Parliament, what would we benefit by traveling around the world, going up? How do we handle the community? The department is supposed to have done that thing long ago. I mean, they have traveled quite a lot around the world, and it's supposed to have given us the experiences that we're talking about from long ago. I mean, it doesn't really exist. I mean, the difference in the South African situation is the constitutionality were a constitutional state, and many other countries are not constitutional states, were guided by the constitution. And those trade unions are using that particular loophole to be able to create their own formation. That's why we rather engage the constitutional court and traveling around the world and use other resources to say you want to know how do you handle your own association. To me, South African constitutions are totally different. You have to engage the constitution. If you don't engage the constitution and define it constitutionally or weapon an interpretation by one particular person, you are going to face a serious problem. You might bring in and invent methods or other solutions from other countries, but they wouldn't work so easily in the South African context. The only people for the authority to interpret it in the above parliament, it is the constitutional court. I would still prefer it that there doesn't seem comfortable with that one. Let's work with them. Let even parliament itself go into the legal department here and ask ourselves that is there any potential for them to help us to see if there's any other way that we could reinterpret that type of situation. For soldiers are a different entity in the country, and soldiers are dealing with the majority of the country. As you can see now, the type of memorandum they are crafting out are not really security, are not related to what is happening within the department itself. Are beginning to have political meaning. Tomorrow they can tell us easily that they don't want to go support the peacekeeping mission. If we command them to go to Zimbabwe, they will tell us about the border. No soldier can do that. No soldier can do that. And that's where the department is correct. No soldier can do that. And if ever we can allow that situation to creep in within the department now, we must keep it to bank and dissolve the department. And the type of situation that we have in the border that are foreign, we'd better allow them the police to monitor. Because they've got politicized soldiers who tell you that they can't stop people not to come into South Africa. For me, I mean, where I'm seated, that type of situation can't be allowed. And we can't continue giving that political support. Those kids, you know, because they are beginning to interpret and taking and usurping the authority of the country away from us, rather than honoring and looking to the constitution. And the one part that they did do is a very serious mistake, which you are trying to address, is the type of how they interpret their own relation and their own intervention during the xenophobia. I mean, like a situation where they themselves say, the police are better paid, we are not being paid. You know, when soldiers start getting into that and getting into creating tensions between themselves and the security, this is what we are trying to address with the issue that is related to the Scorpion. That situation, Jefferson, we've seen it how it has worked against the Scorpion now, and it is going to work against the soldiers. If we don't take up a political initiative now for stopping that type of creation, it is going to be a problem, and it is going to be the instrumental part to our own country, and the security for all countries is being trusted by those that are entrusted by the constitution for them to take up this country. They are not giving up the constitution to keep in our own
and knowing pretty well, and you made it clear that they do not, in terms of the regulations, they are not doing it. But in the interest of the country, in the interest of the citizens and morale of the country, this committee gave, had so many other things to do in the past, but we gave them, and we still are, giving them the time. The fact that they can just pick up the phone and phone you You're the chairperson of this committee. This is the ultimate body. This body here tells the minister where to take the bus and when to get up. And they can just make a call to you and say that we are going to do something. They have no reason to even communicate with you in writing in advance. To me, they have undermined Pali. Just go beyond FAMDF. I think they have undermined Parliament because it was Parliament that put into place this provision. That's one. The other question that we need to ask, why are these people so angry when there are mechanisms within the department, mechanisms and structures to address grievances, whether it is at a unit level, whether it is higher level, there are structures in place. We have unity justice system to address issues, we have the arbitration board, we have the NDC, we have other mechanisms which we are not even aware of, some of them. For example, we have the collective mechanism department, one of the departments, which deals with some of these matters. Now the question I'm beginning to ask that before when you see something boiling, you see the lid starts hopping and jumping because of the heat it's generating, that's exactly where you are now. Now what was it that happened that didn't initially cool down the heat going when we let somebody just put the fire on and nobody is it that somebody didn't sincerely try to address it at that level now that it's boiled over? So we perhaps have to look seriously also, in as much as I condemn the actions of the union, and in fact, you might want to consider calling them here to explain themselves, because in any other part of the world, any pamphlet which says we declare war on, I don't care who it is, soldiers are not supposed to be declaring war on anybody but the head of state who commands it, that that's the enemy, and that way you go, that way they're supposed to go. This is sedition, this is treason. In fact, if I was head of state or minister of defense, I would put them all before the military tribunal. And in fact, to be honest with you, I have no hesitation in putting them all against the wall and asking them to be crucified. Honestly. Because it is the security of the state that is involved. It is the security of the territorial integrity of the country that is involved. It is the integrity of the parliament, and if all of that is thrown out of the window by a bunch of people, you don't have government. You don't have government. You just want the chairperson of the committee and tell him, "Sugar, I'm going to find out, you're going to do this, I'm going to do that." So if that's the attitude, we got big problems. I can tell you here now, we got big problems in this thing. I hear the general who was presenting, he said something, and I think we must have missed one. It's perhaps the general is being he's trying to tell us something indirectly. And let's focus on what he's trying to tell us indirectly by repeating what he said. He said that during the process of engaging with them, and that head of committee, those Sandhu to head legal representative, but they seem to be taking cues from somewhere else, beyond merely legal representative. You know what that means, sir? That means that there is a serious concern. I haven't seen any report, but I'm really giving the line. That this issue is not only about trade and butter and salary. That there is element political forces outside the union that are actually, now I don't want to politicize this stuff because I'm sitting here as a member of that, but I'm a member of this committee and my heart is here. Read between the lines. It's not only about bread and butter. It's not only about salary. Look, we hear that they want, the department is offering them 10 point something. Then we hear they demanding 19 point something. Then I want to ask myself, is it really about salary? So, I get the sense that what they're trying to tell us, not in so many words, is that this goes beyond bread and butter. Perhaps you would want to call those meetings. Because I'm sure, And I wouldn't go beyond saying what I want to say for security reasons.
Yes.
I wouldn't, right? Maybe I should come back. Maybe you need a close reading to actually ascertain that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, firstly, I must thank the two speakers and the two involved in the discussion. And again, thank the apology that he has put forward on behalf of the general. I want to comment on the treatment. Is the Department of Constitutionality has a right to treat if the either is new, then they should stop. Secondly, if the threshold allows it, certain issues, not all issues. According to the constitution of your country, we should have a disciplined military, disciplined oil, disciplined. If they are complaining, they are being raised by men. I don't know, Jefferson. Let me illustrate this by saying, I come from a big, very big village. I only see my father once in a blue moon, or maybe once in a few months. But the person that I communicated with every now and then, if there is a need to communicate, was my mother. And my mother was a channel and block from me to my father. And at the end of the day, I know the rules and the regulation of this family through my mother. We do have. We do have the fucking we can do this in full time. We do have the Constitution Court. We can do this in full time. And those people that we are talking about here all can read their lives. They can write to whomever they want. But not to ignore the channel of communication. Now, the constitutionality of the matter, that's where I come from. That's where I've been before. I understand, Chairperson, why the committee decided to treat me and not to assist. And I'm using the word assist more than constructive. You were assisting because they were complaining that they're coming up. Which I think all of boy, members and boys spoke to them. Which I don't want to repeat because the death has made it to them of what is going on. But let us make it quite clear the relationship, constitutionally and otherwise, that we as a committee do not have and we must not have a relationship with any treaty union with the one for that. That's the constitutional reason. If the department claims that they meet the threshold, department must come out with a regulation. That will see the department how they are going to be ministered. They will be no need whatsoever to talk about the regulation that will see the department. And then the members who are working within the department don't know anything about the regulation. That is why I'm saying these people can be wrong. That's what we should do. Lastly, chapter 3. Nielsen talked about, the Honorable Nielsen talked about the complaints, why the people are complaining in Luther. They are saying the people are crying. I don't say they are crying foul, they are crying. I don't want to talk about it much. We talk about getting complete. The department must be very clever to have three steps forward. In fact, if people are complaining, and they can hear the complaint, the department must come up with a solution in advance of any action that can be taken by anybody. I recall Jefferson Wilson, when we talk about the culture and the understanding of the culture of the people, it's because after we went to somewhere else where the soldier 2570, then we said people must understand the culture that is because of the culture. I always say departments must be different. Because they should understand this issue. They should know. And they should detect what is going on in the ground. So that those things that people are complaining about, they are advanced in knowing exactly how to react. That's the chapter. I still don't believe, seriously, I know this is talking on Friday. I still don't believe that the people who were marching on Friday were the members of the unless otherwise somebody can just bail you out and say, these are their and so on and so forth. And then you give me all the list of them. I still don't believe that. Because as far as I remember, and as far as I know, these people, when they are employed, they are being groomed of how to behave and how to prosper within the world. Therefore, they cannot have a memorandum which is not speaking about them, speaking about something else. What about me now? How will I march now? If they march on my behalf. Because that is my job. Yes. How can they speak about xenophobia? Because I'm trying by ordinance to say, hey, we must stop this thing and so on and so forth. Those are the people who should implement what I'm saying. But they are marching against me. That is why I'm saying my story. Unless somebody comes to me and say, Baba Joe, this is their land number, this is these people, and so on and so forth. Then I would believe that. At this moment in time, even the memorandum, it was wrong. I don't know where it was from. And then we moved on. And what happened? And the name soldiers been used. Yeah. Now, if that is the case, the department, by identifying those people, should deal with them. If there are any according to the constitution of the country, Chapter 11, the primary objective of the defense force is to defend and protect the republic, the territory integrity and its people, in accordance with the constitution and the principle of international law, regulating the use of about the mind, in out of duty. That's where my problem that is not the situation. You must tell us.
If you say to us, no, it's not a management, and you say to us, my management practice is good, the department is managed well, the grievance procedures are, the structures are in place, the well-being of the soldiers are good, then the problem is somewhere else. Then, what I'm suggesting for the general says, then we need to look at that grievance, I think you use the word, as a legal framework. If you say to us, as that is the issue, then you bring it back to that government. Then we have to say, okay, we are the legislator. We wrote the, we approved the act, and can this is now on our turn. Yes, we need to look at it. Let's relook chapter 20, or relook at the establishment of union, or whatever the case may be. And then you need to tell us straightforward. It's not towards mandate and mandatory issue is for us. So we cannot continue month after month to rehash this issue. Because what we're doing now, we're running into a problem of moving in circles. And we need to find the right answer of breakup that can be defined. So I really that the department tells us and we need to deliberate among ourselves where is the solution. Is it the management issue within the department? Is it the legal issue that we need to address and why or not? Then we must place it. If you say it was a mistake in 1998 or 2002 to confuse it, then we must place it. But then you can't mission away. You can't say no, they don't exist anymore. Because of the legal challenge going between the union and the union and so and so forth, then we must fill the vacuum. So be very careful, because if you create the vacuum and you don't release it, you may have problems yourself. So I think we must thank the department for the briefing. I think it should be a thorough briefing, but they need also to tell us where are the solutions. Whether they need our assistance or whether you say no. Management issues, we will find. Or you say we're going to do it. The parliamentary legislation, you must be honest. But in a process, you cannot afford to manage. Not only issues like this, there are far more major challenges out there in the continent where there is. We should be having this meeting about key support operations, how we improve our performance of our soldiers, and how good we are,
and what the challenges are.
Not on this issue. We're wasting time. I don't think it's not important. It's very important. But we cannot prolong it for too long. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for the union, it's not healthy for the department, it's not healthy for the well-being of the people who lost all the people. They don't got to listen to this. It's not for me.
Yeah, I think from the intellectual and the body is coming. I think it's very important. Very important to call. It is a very and the entire world is doing something that has ever happened. And if they are that good, the intervention that we made from the 70s together with they were targeting the opening of our country. Once again, they've achieved a particular action by going straight to the union and accepting. And the
I think you were deliberated for quite some time and listened to all the input, even some of them at the risk of contradicting ourselves. I think I just put my back to my situation where, at the meeting where I was sitting, there's a very clear reason why we said an ad hoc committee must be formed. Remember, there are only two things. There is a bargaining story and the that they don't meet the threshold and all that. We said, okay, that death is okay, they don't meet that threshold, but what do we do with the grievance? Then we said, we are not taking anything away, but we are saying, can we look at the grievance? And while we were looking at the grievance, we said, then let the ad hoc committee try and work on it. Now, what we must know is the fact that one, the department did not come back to us on the report they have come as expected on the ad hoc committee. That's one side, not the under the bridge. But on the other hand, what has happened, the very people who are here, who we had then said, no, look, we are not entering whether you meet the threshold, but we look at the grievances, we ask the department to listen to you. They've even actually defied the parliament. I don't know what more do we want. That's why Babunjo, the very same chapter that we have read, is speaks to us. It has got nothing to do with defending the borders and all that, all what goes with that chapter. Even rights have got limitations. We know it is very, it has got limitations. Therefore, what I would suggest is that we don't, you know, crack ourselves less riches. What must be very clear to the people, and the people are reporting, the reporters have reported that Parliament has tried to listen, they have put a committee to try and deal with this matter. But then that very committee is not respected. Okay? Because if they go that way, we'll play by the book. And what the book says, that's where the constitution starts. That's very clear. That's where the constitution starts. They must go and meet the threshold. Otherwise, defense must act like a defense. Stop putting, act like a defense where we can go to decide to say, want to be stopped and give a hearing. We're going back to our responsibilities as we are here. Do our job, we'll do our part. I don't want to tell you, what is still main thrust is not, has got nothing to do with this marching or other things. Our observations, my colleague here, Honorable Nyamibo, has explained it. We've gone on site, we've seen the appalling conditions. That we don't need the union to tell us about that. We know it, we've seen it ourselves. We're only saying also department speak to those things. Work on those things. Otherwise, let's all go and do our work as expected. Because one thing for sure, you know, that unions will never stop. There's even rent people. I mean, we have done what trade unions, we come from them. You'll get them, people are unemployed, you'll give them whatever promise to go and march on a particular day. Look, I'm not working, you're going to give me 500 rand, whatever amount. But for me, just to go and look and look anyone. But why will I not stop? Will I not take that opportunity? I will. The conditions on the country are like that. You know, they'll help me to do it. So I'm saying, that we mustn't try and look at, let's try and do the basic thing. I think we'll get there. And I rest our case to say, no, look, Chairperson, we also look at our time. I'm sure let's try and move a bit speedily so that we can plan for other things. We can't be seen with this irresponsible tendency.
Professor, you know, in all times, we've played our role. In all times, we've done what Colonel Afghanistan is looking for. We have negotiated from who did not even have a challenge by constitution. The parliament doesn't have that authority of engaging. We did that. But the bottom line here, Professor, is that if we don't provide leadership on this issue, we are going to have another man coming to Parliament, to come and insult us here in Parliament. And you know, the moment people lose confidence in Parliament, we must close the shutter. We must close the shutter that Parliament is in a breaking board in society, have gone out. Those people, the moment they they behave in the manner they've been behaving, even of undermining the president of the country, it's a dangerous precedent. That's why I'm saying, let's not entertain this humor. Let's not even try to follow the root corona of his behavior, to ask us to call for a hearing. Let's not listen to them. They have conducted in a manner that is unbecoming in this country. So we can't, as this portfolio committee, even sit down and say, we want to reflect on the report of the defense. They have presented it in front of us by a committee today. I don't know what other meetings we have to reorganize and do what. Let's make the decision here, Chapter. Let's cut the relationship of Parliament with the tribunal movement and let it be conducted in a manner that the State Department finds it difficult to operate. But the Parliament is an institution. Let's defend ourselves from the task of security. Let's not move beyond what we are confronted with. I mean, we know South Africans are very good in this perspective to go to the court. If they bring Parliament into this thing and they pick up to court, how will we ever get out of this? How will we get out of this? So, if we are existed, well, this is really, they can really put us into a very embarrassing situation when they drop Parliament to go and account about this type of activity inside the court itself. So I'm just pleading and really asking the person that let's close this chapter here and persuade Honorable Foreigner and Honorable Shah, let's close this thing and let them continue engaging with the department and let's stick to our role of getting a report from the department until we are satisfied and keep on advising the department as the institution. Let's not get into this tribunal. We aren't tribunalists at this particular moment. We are leaders to everybody in the country. What do you say about those two that run as much? What type of an impression are you giving to them? Are you saying to them they are morons because they can't go into a union and march? They can't come here, they send the Secretary of Defense to come and represent them here and speak on their behalf. So we are saying now, because you're not part of the tribunal, we will then go and we'll listen to the tribunal and then listen to other ordinary people. Let's not transgress our system. Let's not create a demoralization of the soldiers themselves. Parliament would find itself in a very serious situation. Those soldiers who doesn't, who are not illegitimate, who are seated at the barracks, doesn't have representatives if you have a soldier. It's our responsibility. And according to the guide and all, it is our responsibility to continue building the morale of the soldiers. Those that are in the trade union, don't deserve our support. With the type of memorandum they are doing, the type of conduct they are going about, they don't deserve our support. So I don't see ourselves demoralizing those that are seated in Burundi, doing peacekeeping missions, dying on behalf of the country. And we are seated entertaining people who are working in GCC here. I don't know where we want to go. I'm really trying to persuade this community. This hearing can hear in this reunion. Let's get out of the field. Let's focus on trying to find resources for those that are seated in the institution itself and who are giving dignity to our country. The more we open up this matter, the more we're demoralizing ourselves. Let's get out of this business.
I will take you,
thank you, Chairperson. My last word on the matter would be, firstly, I would urge the department to critically look at its HR department and to ensure that everything is running smoothly there, to make all other grievance addressing structures functional. That's one thing. Secondly, I agree with the Honorable Bui. I think we must make a decision, and I support the decision if you decide that, Chair, that we will not entertain any union again here in person in this building. However, at Parliament, anybody, if you can feel free to write to us. If the union wants to write to you, Chair, they can write to you. We can discuss the letter, and you can then communicate via your secretary. They must contact your secretary, and you can write a letter to them responding. And make sure that you do. It will be good to write back to them, because if you don't, then they will write you three letters to which you don't respond, and then they will go to the media and say, look, we tried to solve the problem, and nobody is listening, not even Parliament. So they'll give them a reason. So when they communicate with you in writing, that's fine. We will support whatever you write on the piece of paper they have sent to them. I think Dr. Purnam has raised a very crucial question. The department must be very, very clear with us. They must tell us, as you said, if the issue is at management level, which they think means there's a lack of capacity in those departments, then they must tell us, and they must talk to us. And if it is beyond, if there are political reasons as to why these unions are behaving the way they are, then they must tell us in a close meeting session as to what they really know. And what they know, we deserve to know it, so that we can make objective decisions. And my advice to the Department of Defense would be to watch the unions very carefully in inverted commas, because we do not want an Idi Amin in our country. Okay, we don't want Idi Amin in our country. Idi Amin wasn't a high-ranking officer. He was just a nut who came from the bottom. So we don't want an Idi Amin. One madcap taking a few soldiers who are angry, taking over a unit or something, and hitting down the presidency and all of that, and Anarchy should be, we don't want that. So I hope you're doing your job. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Chair, maybe I would like to say to the department that the union, those people of the so-called union, they are members of South African Defense Force. If they are marching and whatever happens on the road, the bankers or the bank shops and so on, it will be the responsibility of the department. If ever somebody is going to sue, it's going to sue South African Defense Force, not the union because of its initiative. So they should make sure that you are controlling these people, you are controlling all the whole situation of your members, your own members, to say that you are commanding them. Thank you.
Personally, as individual, I was going to give you the severely those soldiers. They are supposed to be handcuffed inside and face something more. Now, because if you look at what they are doing, there is something behind. They are not doing that just as soldiers because they are soldiers. That demand. Not as in comfortable and said. There is a certain group which is there influencing the soldiers to do this thing. Political group or scholar group. So in all, you must be careful in this parliament. You must roll our thoughts very, very, very soon. You must roll our thoughts very soon. You must not wait until something comes.
I thought that would be allowing the department to respond, but members have done something else. While they were asking questions, they were also giving direction. To say then on time, I think the department has had it all. And it is our responsibility also as parliamentarians, as much as we do vent our anger, that we have also to act upon that. I'm saying this because some of the key questions General Mukwege are coming back to your side. Because I think we do identify that when we resolve and when we agree on your name, it was not because it came from us, it came from them as an HR person. So we were in a way trying to drive so that you are able to handle them within the confines for the rules and regulations that are defined and are within, not signed, not the union regulation. We're trying to then say apply what is applicable within the rules. Now, you are picking up some key issues to say some of their legal team, were the very same ones who were the trusted of the very same act, the Bill to Enhance. They pushed you into that entrapment to begin to discuss and negotiate the union and the existence of the union. Not the grievances of the soldiers that you spoke about. So they pushed you into a corner whereby you don't address the issue, but address their existence. They were very clever. They were very clever to do that. But what the committee is then saying, was still saying the very same thing that we said. Continue and apply the law that prevails. Why so? Because we don't recognize them as unions. But address the bread and butter issues of the soldier. The ad hoc committee was not recognizing the existence of the union. The ad hoc committee intended to bring all those who felt that they were aggrieved and representing some sort of people outside there, to then say, this is what the department is going to apply until you meet that particular threshold. That's then we said, we're not going to involve ourselves in the matters of other people on the court of law, because they said so. Both Sandu 1 and Sandu 2 said that in this meeting. That they are in dispute, and the matter is before the court of law. So it is then not recognized them as a union that can begin to bargain. For them, it was just a caution to then say, go and address this because you can achieve your objective. If they are safe to do that, he then suggests that they trust the department to negotiate what was not negotiable. Because they should have come up, as we said, with those grievances, and then say, these are the grievances that we are talking about, that are affecting our soldiers. Simple grievances by that, not about the existence of the union. So that was then saying, once again, we cannot, Dr. Kora Professor, we cannot micromanage. Can't. We can't indeed. In long and short, it keeps on coming back. The question that has been asked by Dr. Correa. Defense of the management. Because these grievances have found a fatal ground. That then they find themselves being manipulated every time and again. General Mkwele just said that the union is managed. Because the subscriptions, they are causing them to exist and do the nonsense like that. And they will continue in perpetuity. Now, it then goes back, Comrade Boy, to then say, how do we then train our soldiers? How do we inculcate that kind of discipline? And what cost of soldiers do we have today to begin to understand? Never, ever, ever had a situation where whereby you petition a commander in chief, the president of the country. And then you bring all political and current political issues that are to be resolved by politicians, by the way, not by soldiers. But they bring those issues as members of the state, talking on our behalf. To suggest that those politicians are not politicians, we should be politicians and begin to talk about the past. We should be talking about electricity. Now, these are some of the issues that would really urge the department. One member talked about being quiet. Be a step ahead. Because this is a kind of a report that we expect when we meet in our workshop. In the broader workshop that we're going to have, is to then say, what is the department doing in addressing the challenges that are faced by our soldiers? We're not going to ask union, we're going to ask yourself. It's the department, not the union. Not the union. It's the department that is to answer as to what it is then doing to that. Yes, we are quite aware of our question of the budget. We have to. In the budget debate, you spoke much about many other things, which we supported, and we said, yes, the budget of the department must be looked into. That's then the reason of selection. To then say, how do we then begin to address all those challenges that are facing the department? Each unit must now relook and begin to come up with a work plan to begin to address those issues. So that when we begin to do our oversight, we are able then to say, yes, these issues are being addressed. But as a portfolio committee, we are going to meet once again and look into these issues further. I think we'll be having a closed meeting portfolio committee to look into these issues and I'm saying this because I don't want to hear that we go through a situation where we are being told that what is happening also is being spearheaded by some members of the department within. I've never loved to hear that. Instead of addressing the situation, but you begin to assist and provide information, sending out information from the department to the outsider. I'm talking here about the security matter. We're talking defense. These are some of the issues that I think we have to look into. Let me close on this now. The committee, as I indicated, is going to meet. And I'm not sure, Secretary, whether you want to continue. I don't know.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I think this was extremely useful for us, the response of the Honourable Member, and we've really taken serious note of the clear and serious voice that came out here, and the consent. I think we are going to deal with as a department, as Honourable Member has indicated. I think just briefly to respond to the question of the constitutionality. It was actually the constitutional matter, section 21 of the constitution. The department, Minister of Defense, refers to that. The constitution said, yes, indeed. Because the other side were arguing that they should be treated, soldiers should be treated as ordinary workers. And the court ruled in terms of that section that, yes, but in the Department of Defense, it's a unique environment. Because it's a unique and so on, it is
then made those recommendations that we should come with those regulations, you know, to regulate this, what were the conditions, the restriction, and so on. And we acted according to that. And that is why, then, and we went even further. When we realized that Dr. Koranov indicated that actually that intent of the ruling of the Constitution in Chapter 20 was not being realized, we even went further to propose to Cabinet to amend that Constitution 21, that Section 21. There was a big battle, and the Justice Department, they said, no way, still work within the regulatory framework and so on, try to regulate, try really to act according to the spirit because of that ruling, because it was not intended as we had the consequences that were beginning to have. We still have that, and it was more along the side of this section, amending Section 55 of the Defense Act, so that you have those review boards. And we have benchmarks internationally. We know how the German armed forces are dealing with the associations and other armed forces, and really the viable routes we're pushing, and serious intervention in our future trust, as we indicated. Is this one of the personnel pay review board, you know, which will be nationally and advisory, because we don't have these PCVSC, we don't have all these frameworks that and mechanisms that the civilian other labor have. So we are refining that, we are working very hard on that. We think our solution might be lying along those philosophies. But indeed, we agree with the spirit that also management, I think I must address that thing, you know. But indeed, we face challenges as Department of Defense. But really, this cannot be taken to the extreme. Because, like all other departments, we are faced with the same challenges, you know. In general, in terms of the pay structure and so on, and remuneration and conditions of service, our soldiers are not very different than the rest of the public service out there. And this is how we've been benchmarking. And in other respects, we're even better because we have three hospitals. Whilst other normal public service and so on, they go to medical aid, so we have hospitals, we have clinics, we have whole regimes of other incentives and benefits that other ordinary citizens do not, you know. So, of course, we face challenges. Like all other departments, our facilities, our obsolete equipment and so on, issues that we are grappling with and members. But really, this does not justify. We need to do more, of course, got better organized, improve, get better money and so on. But really, it cannot justify, in our view, the type of conduct that we see. We're part of this nation that is facing this challenge, more so as soldiers. But as members of guidance and so on, we're looking into those areas. We need to look critically into ourselves as management. You know, we need to look seriously at this legal framework. And we agree that this really is not tolerable. But thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, members. We are here. We are facing another chapter, Defense Amendment Bill. We have amendments that we did make proposals, and we're expecting the department to come back and indicate as to how they intend to influence us to accept those amendments. Let me hand over to whoever is planning to lead the discussion from the department side. Is it all going over?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, I'm with the director together, eh?
Yes.
From the legal service, who has been working on this thing. I thought the first time they were not going to be, we're not going to make a presentation.
No, directly talk to key amendments.
To key amendments. Okay. I think it's basically four areas of the amendment.
Yes, one is section 55 of the bill, where it will allow the minister. The dilemma we face there is that in terms of the broad public service, when it comes to SMS members, the GPSA does act on those, you know. It determines the conditions of service and the pay increment and so on of the members of SMS, while the level 1 to 12 is dealt with through the normal TSCBC route. In our department, that is the challenge that we face. So we are amending, proposing that we amend that to allow the Minister of Defense, in consultation or after consultation with DPSA and National Treasury, to be able to determine those conditions of service. We are also in that section exploring this, as I've spoken to earlier in the other discussion. The amendment further empowers the Minister of Defense to establish a personnel pay review board for the SANDF in order to advise him in the determination of salaries and general benefits of SANDF. And the other amendment, Chairperson, I'm just talking very briefly to this, is with regards to the Inspector General. Yes, and specifically around areas of forensic investigation, fraud, and so on, to capacitate the IG to be able to perform those functions. There's also an issue around the reserve force member. The dilemma here is that the state president can only call upon the reserve force members only in a state of national defense, state of emergency, and so on. But in the normal course of, you know, during peacetime, these people are not compelled to actually respond to call up and perform functions. For instance, it should be on voluntary basis. If you say there are peacekeeping missions, you call them, if they say no, it's no. So we wish to put up an amendment that will really compel them under peacetime and under specific situations to enable the commander-in-chief to be able to call on these members to serve. So this is it, brief and in a nutshell. I don't know, Njigela, if you want to come in.
Yeah, there are some specifics that were put by the members there. Njigela,
thank you very much. I had hoped to specifically speak to the issue of the reserve, because it's a matter that has been outstanding for a while. But I just conferred with my parliamentary office by year, and for some reason the proposal that we're supposed to be tabling to you today has not reached me, and I suppose has not reached the committee. With your permission, Chair, I would just want to speak to this thing, and I'm sure during the break we can just check with his office as to what exactly where the document has been spent at this moment, so that it can be distributed and we can further engage.
What I would say then is that if you can talk to it, then have speculated, because we are meeting tomorrow with an intent to go through the bill clause by clause. That is our intent. So it would be better, once again, that you be part of that meeting tomorrow when we meet, so that if anything happens, we are able then to inform Parliament accordingly, whether we are able to or not. So what I'm then saying, we can talk to them.
Okay.
No, we are communicated with Parliament, because there's one thing that I did not appreciate. It was not, no. Your club was correct. It's a programming committee. It did not communicate with the portfolio committee. They just simply decided to schedule it for Friday. Yeah. No, we still have time. So
no,
when did Tuesday, by the way, it's Tuesday. Yeah, ours, we are targeting the 17th. We are targeting the 17th to have debate. That is next. if we're able to finalize it before Thursday.
Thank you very much once again. I just want to take the committee back to the first briefing that we had, where we indicated the differences that we seem to have at the time with the state of advisor with regard to this particular proposal. Chair, the issue, as FECDEF has already indicated, there is a practice within the defense force. I will refer to it as practice, in view of the opinion that we got from the state of advisor. Where members of the reserve force are contracted in terms of a specific contract. Now, they offer themselves to render service for a particular period in a year. Now, in terms of that contract, there is no real obligation on them to render service at the instance of the Department of Defense. Now, in other words, it is dependent upon the individual to indicate what period of the year, if you are contracted for 12 days, for instance, what period of the year you will want to serve your 12 days. In other words, even if there were to be a crisis today, which will require the Defense Force to call up the reserve, individuals will still have an option to say, I'm not available this week, I'm available on the 5th of December. So that was the primary focus of the concern that the Reserve Force Council had raised. I mean, the Reserve Board had raised with regard to the issue of the employment of the Reserve Force. Now, they had indicated that it is in the interest of the department that whenever it invests in training these people, that at least it should be guaranteed service whenever it requires that kind of service. So obviously, this was a matter that was discussed within the defense, the Department of Defense itself, and everybody supported the idea. And I may just indicate here that it was also discussed by the Reserve Force Council. I'm sure you have heard Admiral Burkett speaking on the issue a number of times in the previous appearance. So there seems to be consensus within the reserve community itself that there is a requirement that this thing should be in place so that when people are trained, we're able to get return on the investment. But then the state law advisor came back to us and said, we have particular concerns with this issue. And we have looked at the concern and we have had discussions with them around this issue. And their concern primarily revolves around how we define the defense force. Now, if you look at Section 11 of the Defense Act, it describes the defense force as consisting of a regular force, reserve force, and auxiliary. Now, when you read the Defense Act, you will find that we use the words reserve force and regular force separately when we want to refer specifically to the reserve force or the regular force. But when we want to refer to the defense force as a collective, we use the word defense force. Now, I think this issue is at the heart of the whole debate. Because now, if you look, for instance, at Section 18 in terms of the employment of the defense force in peacetime, the word that I use there, Chair, is defense force again. Now, when we said they have no obligation, the state law advisor said, but how can you say that? Because Section 18 speaks of the defense force, which includes reserve force in the team. Now, we have accepted that argument. We have considered it and we have accepted that this is the correct argument. But what we are saying, Chair, here is there has been a practice or a convention that has been entrenched over the years where these members had a choice to say, I will serve my 12 years at a particular day, not at the time when you require it. And that issue is still a concern for the defense force because we train them, we should be able to utilize them whenever there is a crisis for which they should be deployed. So despite the concern that the state law advisor has raised, now the question is, how do you take away that tradition, that practice, that convention that has been entrenched over the years? Now, our submission, Chair, is, in view of the entrenched tradition itself, we think the safest route to do this thing, as opposed to simply doing it by means of a contract without any statutory basis, that there should be a specific provision, at least in the Defense Act itself, and more specifically in Section 53 of the Defense Act, which clearly stipulates that members of the Reserve Force who have entered into a contract to serve with the Defense Force will be liable to serve
at the instance of the defense force. And now that will cover, more especially with regard to peacetime. Because if you look at the Defense Act now, in Section 58 particularly, it specifically imposes an obligation on everybody to serve during the time of war, the state of emergency, or the state of national defense. So we're quite covered in that respect. But with regard to peacetime, more especially in view of the tradition or the convention that has become entrenched, there is a concern that we need to specifically or at least expressly in law say where the defense force has a requirement to deploy these people, it should be able to call them up. And those who are not who don't respond to the call, there should be some kind of a sanction. Now, that's where the whole debate around the volunteerism came up. Now, again, the argument which was advanced by the Reserve Force Council and which is support, which we supported, was to say the defense force is indeed a voluntary force. But there should, of course, be a cut-off point as to what volunteerism means in this context. As an individual, I volunteer to join the defense force. But once I have joined the defense force, I cannot continue to be a volunteer. I am obliged and I'm bound by the rules that are applicable to the defense force. So it's only voluntary in the sense that you cannot be conscripted to join the defense force. You voluntarily join it. But once you join, you subject yourself to the laws that are applicable to it. So in that sense, even the issue of volunteerism, I do not think it's a problem because we are not talking conscription. People will still enlist voluntarily, but they then should be bound to serve whenever the defense force has that particular requirement. So, there is a detailed submission on this issue. But I just want to speak to the issue of the sanction again, Chair. You will probably recall, Chair, that in terms of Section 58, again, there is a critical issue of a member who retires or his contract of employment with the defense force terminates during the time of war. In terms of Section 58, the minister has the power in those circumstances to extend that contract for the duration of that time of war or state of war. We would want to bring a similar provision with regard to the issue of contract for the reserve. Where a reserve force member has been called up for, which we can use the xenophobic situation that we have, even if a contract of that member expires in the middle of that crisis, the minister should have the power to extend it up to the end of the crisis. So you can't just say my contract ends today, irrespective of the crisis, I'm withdrawing from the deployment. So the minister should have a mechanism to say, I called you up for a particular crisis. If your contract ends, I have an option to extend it if your service is required for that particular purpose. So that's the second proposal, Chair. Then the third proposal, Chair, that we made is the issue I've already touched on, of a sanction. But now that we create this obligation expressly in the law, what about a member who has entered into a contract and volunteered to serve for so many years, for so many days or months? Now he's being called up for a particular crisis and refuses to honor that. Now we're saying there should be a sanction for that. We should create an offense for that kind of behavior. So those are basically the three proposals that we made to you, Chair. It's very unfortunate that you don't have it before you so that you can engage it. But we will make sure that it is distributed so that we can engage properly. And that is the long and short of it, Chair, with regard to the issue of reserve force. I would want the SECDEF is here and the IG is here and CHR is here. And there were specific issues that were raised in the last appearance, where the committee felt that these are policy issues, that an official at my level may not necessarily be able to engage sufficiently. I will try and just touch on some of the issues so that the sector can take note and possibly respond and the Chief of Human Resources. There was a concern that was raised with regard to the proposal of IG, if I may start with that one, infection care. I think primarily the concern revolves around the issue of the duplication of power, certainly. I can't remember exactly who raised the matter, but the concern was, in terms of Section 10, you have power to authorize employees or to instruct employees of the Defense Force to conduct certain investigations with regard to certain matters in your capacity as the head and accounting officer of the department. Now, we go on now in the proposal to say IG will conduct investigations, will do forensic audits, I mean investigation, and all those kinds. So there was a concern that there is a justification. I had tried to say that the idea here is not to take away the powers of the Fed. But if you look at 10 as it stands, it limits the powers of the Fed for defense to the Defense Secretariat. I'm saying as it stands now, it says you may only instruct employees to investigate within the Defense Secretariat, which is one area of concern. Where the matter is within the Defense Force, you will then request the chief to conduct a board of inquiry. But now, that section as it stands doesn't take into account the reality within the Defense Force that there is a separate office that exists, which is the IG's office, which also has a mandate to do these things now in practice. But in proposing the draft, what we are trying to do, not to take away the power that SACDEF already has in terms of that, but legislate for the powers of the IG. In other words, simply broaden the scope of that, because the IG reports to both the SACDEF and the chief. I think the other issue that was raised with regard to that was the issue of reporting lines. There was a concern that shouldn't IG report directly to the Minister of Defense, as opposed to the SACDEF and the chief? And the concern was, what if at some stage they may have to investigate one of these officers? Wouldn't that hamper their capacity to do the investigation? Now the issue is here, up to now, IG has always been seen as a management tool, not as a watchdog over the SACDEF and the chief. But it became a policy issue, SACDEF, to say, as a legal officer, maybe my scope to answer this will be limited. It's a matter that the head of the department should engage. But there was that question.
He said, it's a minister, not him.
I don't know, sir, whether I should go through all of them or just stop here through all of them. Now I move on to Section 55. I don't know if I left members. If I leave anything out, they can raise the matter. Now I move to Section 55, sir. The issue here was the issue of the role of DPFA and the Minister of Finance or National Finance in the determination of the power. What role are they going to play now in view of this? And I had indicated that as Section 55 says, it says salaries for members of the Defense Force will be negotiated in the Bargaining Council. Then whatever comes out of the Bargaining Council will become what is applicable in terms of salary. Now, obviously, the question then is, what is the role that current DPSA is playing in terms of determining salaries within the Defense Force? And we submitted that in terms of the law as it stands, there is no role. But the practice has been that whatever is being implemented in the wider public sector was simply used as a basis to and for implementation within the Defense Force. But currently the law only makes provision for the Minister of Defense to make determination after bargaining, after consultation with the Minister of Finance. Now there was a whole issue about Treasury not being consulted and all that. Now there is a scope, and I'm sure SACDEF will speak to the issue, how perhaps it can be addressed. On the issue of Minister of Finance, how they can be brought into the loop in this regard. The other issue was with regard to the discrepancy between level 1 to 12 and SMS members. Why do we seek to make this distinction? And I think SACDEF has already touched on the issue that it is a practice in the public service, in the wider public service, and it is desirable that the Defense Force also falls in line with. And the other issue, Chair, that was raised was with regard to the issue of the pay review board. I think the question, if I remember correctly, is related to the jurisdiction of the board, whether it will be limited to the SMS members, or it will cover the whole scope of the Defense Force. Now, the intention, as you will see, there is no specific limitation on it as it stands. It is going to advise the minister on the determination of all the salaries of the Defense Force, from level 1 to the highest level, all the conditions of service, that will be the board that will look into the matter and advise the minister, and then the minister can go on if there have to be negotiations and present that as a position of the department in the bargaining council. And in respect of the SMS, to make that determination after consultation with the Minister. And I think, Chair, those were the questions that come to mind at this stage. Unless I have something else. Thank you very much.
Members, do you want to make any? Yeah. Yeah. No, Chairperson, I thought we'll be guided by the members of Parliament. And the minister, I think in terms of the specific, I think we don't have a problem with the first one, reserve is straightforward. If members accept that. The IG issue, that's a big challenge. I think, firstly, that Section 10 should be amended, Chairperson, in my view, to say that the fact there to instruct any employee or member to carry out inspection or investigation within the... to carry out any or investigation within the... not only defense sector. I think it should be broader. It should be in the department as a whole. Because this is it's premised on the fact that there is Secretary for Defense is the head of the Secretariat. But in terms of law, actually, and PFMA Defense specifically, Secretary for Defense is head of department, accounting officer, principal policy advisor, the backstop within it, the department as a whole. So, and he accounts for all the resources. To scope all the resources of the department, he must. So I think that must be aligned. That is on the first.
Yeah, can I, at that point, just at that point, I agree with you.
That is the one submission one would make, Chairperson. Now, specifically on the Inspector General, you see, once then perhaps we should not confine it specifically to the Inspector General. The practice has been, of course, that I've been assigning this forensic investigation to him to conduct and so on. But there were instances where, looking at his capacity and so on and the gravity of the situation, I could go out directly and actually employ services outside, forensic service, maybe Coopers and whatever, and so on. So maybe it might be too confining to specifically state the IG. I'm open to discussion there. So perhaps if we leave it at the level of the sector to be able to conduct them, then you can employ any capacity, maybe police, military police, there are cases that are investigated by him and so on. But I'm open to that, still I would not fundamentally. Because also there is a debate in the Department of Defense, and I don't want to confuse this one, in terms of the pure function of internal audit and that of inspection in the department. And there's a feeling that perhaps the function of inspection must be more utilized by Chief of the National Defense Force, whilst also the IG does perform certain functions by the head of department, but that the primary capacity of the head of department must actually be the internal audit component and so on, although they must have that relationship between Inspector General and internal audit. These are some of the debates which I've addressed. But it's not a big issue for me on that one. And perhaps I will leave it at that in terms of this. But I feel very strongly that it should not be confined within Defense Secretary. It must be as head of department to Mazika and cause it to happen anywhere in the department. I will stop there on this one.
Can we get a certain date on this one?
Thank you, Chair. I hear what the Secretary is saying, that if you draw a logical conclusion, if he's answerable for something, then he should have jurisdiction over that something, otherwise you can't ask him about it. I think that's the argument he makes. But as I see the bill right now, what this bill is actually doing is establishing an inspector general. And the inspector general is supposed to be doing exactly what we think the secretary is doing, which is monitor compliance, conduct research, conduct an inspection, etc., etc. I think where we are not very clear is who takes those. Well, before we even go there, it's okay to establish an office and a structure. Like that, we have so many structures and institutions, but the issue of capacity. If you're going to establish the office of the Inspector General, as per this bill now, is it just going to end up being another office, or is he going to have real capacity and authority to actually fulfill his mandate? If it's just for the sake of having somebody there with Inspector General, and then that would be a waste of time. So I think that's a question we need to ask. Is this Inspector General, is he going to have authority and power? Can he carry a stick with him? And obviously, it will obviate the problem of your reporting line. Because if he's reporting to you, then you're answerable to us, because you are telling him there is a problem, he's coming and telling what the problem is, and he's going to tell us. So that is true. So that way you will be accountable, because you've got an Inspector General telling you what's wrong. Mm-hmm. But my concern is with the office of the IG.
And two people are protesting. It doesn't make sense somehow. I think you must look at this correctly. I understand, Jefferson, maybe that won't limit it to the system. I understand that it could be the whole department.
Okay,
but
now where are they? You should determine or regulate whatever. Where? There are so many words that they can use. Regulate, determine, whatever. But in regulation, we are saying the minister must not ever talk about something serious and so on and so forth. Where are we on this solution? Yeah, because you can talk about content. Because it seems that this is, the regulation is saying something as and we are saying something that's in this industry and so on and so forth. If we can look at that, and my brother was going to look at it, I wanted to raise it again. What's left? Because it was raised before. I wanted to raise it there. But so that we make sure that if the regulation says the minister must never ever talk about salary in the ever. But here we are saying, we must regulate it in something like that. Then are we really going to begin together? Thanks.
Let me take that into the end of the
meeting. No, Jefferson, for now, my question is covered. I think I'll wait until the answer is here, then I can.
I think there's a bigger policy challenge.
Yeah.
More than the future the enterprise. The policy challenge sector, we're talking about civilian oversight
here
at the bottom line. In the IG, when we formulated the term, what is that policy? Now, if you bring it in and put it in the minister, we are here. That are. And I know, when you bring in the minister and bring yourself in, we are starting to interfere with the idea in elements of accountability. So we need to look into that. Because if you didn't mean that you yourself can be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that things will be connected. You have to get to particularly say particular overseeing some of the work that people are doing to take in an asset management. So if we remove that, we are really creating a fear of conflict. You are opening up a procedure challenge that there's a little bit of lack of accountability and somebody is monitoring in your own. As I said, I have, as I'm saying, it's something that we need to think more. The because the CDE is also correct. The sector, which is a civilian sector. And what does it then say? We have somebody with IQ who is not accountable. Why is the accounting officer in the defense sector? So it does say, it does then say that it's important that even the IQ for somewhere where he becomes accountable. For somebody to pay his salary, somebody to monitor where he goes. And that lies with the sector. So they call attention in the thinking. So I don't know how we are going to resolve it. We need to really think that something has got a lot of implications for the human of how do we do so, how do we formulate that decision. The way we pattern your existence within the system over the national defense. So why don't you allow us to think more properly the relevance of the idea and how we do it creative. Because it doesn't seem up that we allow you to run around, because it might not be you tomorrow, it might be somebody else, but we need to be able to keep more contact in the way we create that particular model. So we need to find the balance. See, also the minister. Not operational, so it's a politician. That just is accountable to me. So how do you need the IG to be appointed by him and be accountable to him? And he's the IG, and he's the secretary of the president. So if I need challenge, I want to think about it, we need to think about it, so that we could be able to advise more questions. I think the bigger challenge with this senior salary of Udo, and which this amendment to me, you know, just put it put in government for conflict.
Put it.
We have to make it step between the side of what time, our opinion, make it in step. It's a problem because we need to address the overall part of the restructuring that is taking place or the proposal that we need with the public administration now. Where they want to hook in and think in to stand under them, which has been the single public sector system. So if you want to bring this amendment, definitely it's going to create tension in government. It doesn't explain to anybody what does this amendment say to the total structure of the public sector. So it doesn't explain itself. And the difficulty also is, you know, after you listen to Ubabungu and listen to the big nuance and listen to the history of the problem, or to find irony when they use the argument of the same big nuance to want to step in and find a role for themselves in the public sector. You know, I don't know whether we use that. You know, that's why I thought I would sleep until I'm sitting in a corner and say, I think my brother may want to. We are really killing us because we have given a disturbance report, a very critical report of trade union in the
minister.
And then 2 minutes after that, we want us to give a legislation based on the public chamber, based on the trade union example that we have just put in the Rotten Park. So I don't know what is it, the different parts of trade union. So maybe this is where I'm really saying, let me in the corner to put for the community. And really make this matter more critical. So, if you read what they are reading, the type of presentation they're trying to cast in the face and have said, you know, it's a very critical thing. It's a very critical thing. Because from where I was, it's more like to take them out of the old process and cut for changing this public sector and help themselves in defense and them to totally address the different entities and dragging them into this. Now they are taking themselves to a better where am I going on? As our sister said, the conflict of mind is beginning to happen. That's why today now, when you are debating, is it correct for the system to go that direction of the public sector be regulated under the charity? And then what? You don't want that one, but this type of thing, because they are talking to
speak to that.
Speak to that, yeah. Now I don't know what you want. As I'm sitting there, I don't know what you want. Do you want to go to under public health, or do you want to remain? And we better battle as a portfolio committee to help with it. In, so that the problem that we are practically seeing now that are taking place within the defense, we can argue upon it. But the moment we bring in the tribunalism and what, then you're committing us with this type of legislation to say to you that going to that public sector thing, and you can't go and fight your fight. So I mean, even the fact that you're asking that thing, you should deal with it, for me, it's very clear. It's at an early stage. Let's finish that debate. And then if we can unite around that one and we took business and we win that battle, then we can defeat the other, how you create your bargaining council and everything. So for me, this type of legislation does create some compromise. And if it does get you to get to people under authority, you won't be able to get you out, but even by next year, or by legislation, you have already legislated yourself to go to the house. I don't even think that we can come. You can correct me, please.
Let's take another question. That's
my point. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, no, I think he is actually
reminding
me of my question. No, seriously, you know, honorable member, when you look at it, some of us because let's say we look at the memo, the generic point where it's coming from. What for our wife taking in the public sector. then regulation salaries is concerned, and therefore there's a need for it. Now that in itself, that's what those guys outside there they want. It should be like this one. And the marching unit. Now, if I use the example I used last time, you see, yesterday we had a problem in Mozambique. One of the best ways to do it, we have to rely on this country. Currently, we have got our own social problems, such as having those disruptions that are people. At the end, we have this, oh, yes, we had the education and other, the public sector last year. That's why it becomes important that we craft it very clearly, not making necessary reference to the other one. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, inside the others, yeah, no, it goes to this one. When it's too fast, you want to pray for this one, and when it doesn't, you go for the other one. Because all in all, we agree. We can't have, we've seen it financially. When the education or the health was in a quagmire for a month, we're saved by the defense. When now it's shifted up down. And I'm saying, let's craft it such that I hear the explanation that without military baggage, I hope I get it well. They tell whatever 10% that is telling the truth. But the announcement that has been made, my understanding is that even if the bargaining teams, they are still having those problems, but no ordinary schools that will be eligible to that one. Yeah. That, I think, is what is better, because then says everybody is public servant, but that one is gone. Now, the only thing that needs to speak to is this type of a special skill that we're talking about in this environment, with this kind of a volunteerism until you are inside, then when you are locked in, you forfeit your choice of volunteerism. Now you are within an establishment. That you understand it, but what incentive we then take within, when you are not in that establishment, that's where those issues of conditions of employment, other things that go through, that we have to look at. If it means bringing a bus to transport people, it's part of the incentive.
Yeah.
If it means a card for access to medical aid and, you know, but let it be a special thing. Why must, if I'm an engineer, let me be motivated to be an engineer out there and like even an engineer who's in the defense establishment. What extra things do I have? This is the whole target that to me needs to be looked at. But I think part of it, I've been covered about this debate. So I just wanted to raise that one point.
You see the
writer.
No. You see my writer, you see my brother. You know you're dealing with the constitution. And if you deal with the constitution, so remember what happened. And I don't hear you in that. I don't hear you. When I'm looking there, even if you want to apply this particular test, this is where the defense is costing the test now. But that's 2021. Because people are going to reject that constitution and say, I don't want to go as a result when they didn't do it. I don't want to go because you are asking us to make it for the same time. People are going to reject because the constitution will give them within a freedom. And something that they can decide about their own mind. Is it there or is it not there? Mm-hmm. Do you think about it or don't think about it? Because obligation in South Africa is overridden by the
constitution.
Yeah. And I'm saying that unless you have a good motivation for that, you can't just ask us to push it in for the sake of. You are also saying that this is in tradition, but traditions are sometimes historically bad, have never had any constitutional obligation. So you need to check that, so that if ever you want us to buy into this, check the constitution, and check the constitution, and check how we make it. That's all I wanted to say about the 2017. Because people are going to come back to you, and they are going to challenge you using the constitution. Let go that
Yeah,
So you want power to run the road.
This is what people are for sure. This is what is happening presently, but it's not in the act. So we have been proposing and saying let it be reflected in the act. Yes. The second point is, I think. The second point is the appointment. Why is the IG appointed for the minister? Let me confine myself there. The practice is that the FMS members are appointed as a member. They are not appointed as a member. You might have done three but as what you said, once the FMS is a minister who appoints you as a member, the special president recommends the minister as a minister. That's what you are saying. No, that's not what I'm saying. We are saying, the practice in the Department of Defense, I want to say in the General Public Service, possibly that is, up until the Chief Director, it is the Minister who appoints. The Director and the Chief Director, the Board Director, and above that, the CDG is appointed by the cabinet. Of course, it is confining to saying the minister. It is the department who decides if it is the CDG, you might be having that here. Can you please amend that? The reporting line, as it stands now, administratively, I report to the certified. Salary increases, and so on. Functional, in the majority in internal office, functional control. So these are the reporting lines. Now we have a structure at present that is called the central structure. The central structure is the chief of the national defense force. And the secretary for defense. I fought in the central structure. That's why in the field.
Which is the central structure?
The central structure is part of the central structure. Point that is very important.
then.
We are going to decide on the
From the point of mandate, that's why I think the problem lies. Thank you.
The whole commander comes here marching. Professor Marshall, remember what? The minister comes back. Ah, you can't do that. No, this is a commander.
Thank you.